Chapter 5. The studio apartment in Southwark was actually the entire top floor of what had once been an old office building, but which had been converted into luxury apartments. The building was owned by Polly, and fully occupied by the smart young people who had been moving into the Southwark area over the years. It was a private joke of hers that the top floor was a studio flat, because it was just one vast room, with only the bathroom hidden away. Jack breathed a sigh of relief when he closed the door behind him. He'd stopped off at Borough Market to pick up some food, and he went to put things away in the kitchen cupboards, carefully pushing the previous occupant's things to one side. Later, after he'd cooked himself a quick pasta supper, he watched TV to catch up on current affairs and planned his next few moves. He knew it wouldn't be long before Torchwood would try to pull him in, and he wanted to get to Tosh before they did. He bared his teeth in a wolf grin when he thought about them trying to pull him down or muzzle him. They'd tried that before, and found out to their cost that just because he was a lone wolf, that didn't mean he lacked allies. The Cybermen had probably killed all the upper hierarchy at Canary Wharf, so this new bunch would be unaware of just how dangerous he could be. It would be fun teaching them just how stupid an idea making him angry was. To be honest, he was a little surprised to discover that Torchwood London seemed to have been reborn in the exact image of the previous arrogant incarnation. After the debacle of Canary Wharf, it had been decided to shut the whole thing down, while a good, long, and very hard look was given to what had happened. Jack had felt vindicated in his often repeated mantra that the entire organization had got way too big, too specialized, and most definitely way up its own arse. He hadn't liked having his prediction that it would all go pear-shaped in a spectacular fashion proved at the cost of so many lives. 27 survivors. And of that 27, 10 subsequently committed suicide or begged to get retconned. 17 survivors out of nearly 300. It had been a total massacre, and all because of human arrogance and greed. Jack had always considered it a total miracle that Ianto had come out of the entire affair as well balanced as he had. It was only later, when Ianto had come to truly trust him, that Jack had caught a glimpse at the deep scars that had been left, and even then he suspected that Ianto kept the worst of the memories buried so deep that even he couldn't access them any more. He'd been in a peculiar position after the Battle of Canary Wharf. From being the eccentric black sheep of the tortured family, carefully kept at arm's length, he had become the sole leader with any real experience that was still alive. Torchwood still had some power, and Jack had moved quickly to consolidate and build on it. Torchwood London might have been a bunch of idiots, but that didn't mean that Earth didn't need a Torchwood of some kind. Fortunately for him, he had allies who thought the same thing, so he had been able to maneuver some neutral or friendly individuals onto the Future Options Committee. He had been confident that they would carry the day and help create a new and improved Torchwood for London. So what the hell had gone wrong? He tried to contact Admiral Ben Jackson, only to be told that he was in a crisis meeting, and Jack's message would be conveyed to him when it was possible. Lethbridge Stewart proved to have gone on a fishing trip, and whilst Doris was delighted to speak to Jack, she was unable to tell him where he had gone. Since the ex-leader of UNIT viewed mobiles as one of the prime instruments of the devil, Jack realized he would have to be patient. He slipped into a meditative state sometime around 2 a.m., and was up and around at around 6 a.m. He'd washed and dried his clothes overnight, but made a mental note to buy some spares later on that day. At 7:30, a courier arrived with a package from Polly that contained $1,000 in cash. There was also a note giving Tosh's home address. Jack's eyebrows rose at that, wondering how on earth Polly had obtained the information. Still, it meant he could see Tosh that little bit sooner, and he hailed a taxi and gave the address, hoping he would get to Tosh before she left for work. She answered the door to her flat when he rang the bell, and for a moment just stared at him in silence, her eyes widening. She was a little thinner, which he disapproved of, and there were lines around her eyes that hadn't been there before. But apart from that, she was still his Toshiko. "One melodramatic entrance, as ordered," he said with a broad grin. She gave a squeal that probably killed bats throughout the greater London area and flung herself into his arms. He returned her hug enthusiastically and laughed without reservation for the first time since he'd got back. "My beautiful Toshiko," he said with genuine affection. She dragged him into her flat, bombarding him with questions and giving him no chance to answer any of them. He kept an arm across her shoulders as he was ushered into the living room and pushed towards the couch. He didn't want to let her go now he had her, and he gave her a searching look when they eventually settled down. "I'm sorry I didn't get back sooner," he said softly. "I'm sorry about Gwen." Her laughter suddenly became tears, and he held her to his chest as she sobbed. Tosh hadn't been particularly close to Gwen, but they had worked well together, and there had been a kind of solidarity in being women driven to distraction by the men they worked with. And there had been the fact that Tosh had suspected that Gwen had been murdered rather than the victim of a senseless accident. He let her cry herself out, figuring that she needed to release. "I'm sorry," she said when she eventually stopped. She got up and went to get some tissues, dabbing at her eyes and scrubbing her face clean before she came back to him. "I thought I'd got past doing this." "Nothing to be sorry about," Jack murmured, gathering up against him again and dropping a kiss on the top of her head. "I just wish I could have been here to stop it." Tosh pulled in a shaky breath. "What's done is done," she said with determined pragmatism. Are you back for good, or is this just a visit?" Jack smiled a little bitterly, hearing the uncertainty in her voice and hating the fact that he was the cause of it. He knew what it felt like to be abandoned. He knew it, and he had still done it to his team. He put his hand against her cheek and smiled reassuringly. "I'm back for as long as you and the others need me." Tosh pulled in another stronger breath and managed a more convincing smile. Before she could say anything else, however, the doorbell went, and Jack was startled to see a look of panic across her face. "What is it?"
"Dr. McCrimmon, I forgot she was due to come and see me this morning."
"You're sick?" Jack asked, frowning. Tosh shook her head.
"No, this is a different kind of..."
She paused and bit her lip as the doorbell went again. Then she leaned forward to whisper in his ear.
"They're trying to trigger the memories that will lead them to Ianto."
Jack's eyes narrowed. "Are they now?" he said. "Well, let's not pussyfoot around. Why don't you let the good doctor in so I can introduce myself?" Tosh opened her mouth as if to argue, then suddenly smiled and nodded. Jack realized she was remembering the old days when he had jumped headfirst into a situation and then somehow managed to get them all out of it in one piece. Well, more or less in one piece. She went to get the door, and Jack heard the sound of another woman's voice. He got to his feet as she came into the room, well aware that he could be an imposing sight, and accentuating the fact by pushing back his coat so that it flared out around him and made him that little bit larger than life. It seemed to work, since the woman took a step back and stared at him with an expression of shock on her face. She was a little taller than Toshiko, about Gwen's height, he thought with a pang. She had short, dark, reddish-brown hair that framed a face that was dominated by a pair of hazel eyes and a willful chin that hinted at a stubborn personality. She was neither plain nor pretty, and if it hadn't been for those eyes and that chin, she would have faded into any crowd and been forgotten as soon as she left a person's line of sight. Her clothing made Jack blink. If he was teased about looking like a lost World War II role-player, this woman looked like she'd wandered off the set of some 60s show. Emma Peel's younger and infinitely more stubborn sister, maybe. He gave her a cool smile and extended his hand. "Captain Jack Harkness, back in town and looking up old acquaintances," he said. She'd recovered from her shock, and a look of calculation came and went on her face. She strode forward to clasp his hand with one of her own. "Dr. Jemima McCrimmon." Before Jack could say anything in reply, she gave a lurch and shoved at the hand she was holding, falling against him. To anyone watching, it would have looked as if he had dragged her forward. When a startled Jack automatically went to catch her, she put her head close to his chest.
"Find an excuse to get us outside. This place is monitored," she said quietly.
Then she pulled herself away and made a show of rearranging her clothing.
"I see your reputation is well-founded, Captain," she said coolly.
Jack hadn't lived this long purely on the fact that he was impossible to kill, and he recovered immediately.
"What can I say? I have a magnetic personality," he said with a grin. Now, why don't we get out of this stuffy flat and find somewhere that does decent coffee? No offence, Tosh, but I didn't come back for your coffee-making skills. McCrimmon put on a show of reluctant agreement, and it wasn't long before they were outside Tosh's apartment block, and Jack had bundled them all into a taxi. He instructed the driver to keep going until they had passed several coffee shops. Then he told him to pull over, and they went inside a Starbucks that also had internet access, so it was filled with a cheerful chatter of students as well as a sprinkling of businessmen. They ordered coffee and settled in a corner table. "Hang on a moment," Jack said when it looked as if though the doctor was going to say something. Reaching into his coat, he pulled the sonic screwdriver halfway out, fiddled with the settings until the blue light changed to a dusky green, then put it back. "Okay, now we can talk. I'm generating a field that will nullify any listening devices you may have planted on you." "You're as thorough as they say," McCrimmon said in admiration. "What's going on?" Tosh asked in bewilderment. "Doctor?" "I'm sorry, Tosh. I know this has been a difficult time for you, but I haven't been able to be completely honest with you." "I guessed something was wrong," Tosh said quietly. McCrimmon smiled. "Smart and tough. That's how they described you when I was given my assignment." "By Torchwood?" Jack asked sharply. McCrimmon nodded. "Look, it will probably be quicker and easier if I tell you what I know, and then you can ask questions. But I want your solemn word of honour, or whatever else you consider sacred, that you will do everything in your power to protect Ianto Jones." Jack was vaguely aware that his jaw must have dropped a good 6 inches. He knew that Tosh was boggling like a schoolgirl seeing a picture of her favourite pop star butt naked. After a moment he managed a nod while he tried to get his spinning thoughts to slow down enough for him to take in what the doctor was telling him. "I suppose it all began, this particular part of the story, back at the Battle of Canary Wharf. I don't know how much detail you know about that terrible time, but it was a time of great heroism and unparalleled massacre. A great many people died. Most of the people who survived did so because of the actions of Ianto Jones." She paused to give Jack an inquiring look, and he nodded. Ianto rarely spoke of the battle, but Jack had found out, partly through accident and partly through determined investigation, that Ianto had been a Von Hartmann's PA, and had organized a response to the Cybermen invasion after Torchwood's leadership had been wiped out by the Cybermen. It had been because of him that anyone at all had survived. Tosh didn't know this, judging from her expression, but she said nothing. "After the battle he vanished, and it was eventually found out that he'd gone back to Cardiff. At first the survivors assumed that he'd gone back as your second in command, and it was a hell of a shock when they found out that he was considered little more than general admin help. He discouraged anyone from contacting him all that frequently, and I'm afraid it was assumed that he was suffering from some kind of battle trauma. God knows enough of the survivors either asked to be retconned or killed themselves over the months that followed." She sighed and shook her head, looking sad, and then gathered her thoughts. "Anyway, they decided to respect his need for privacy. Knowing what they do now, they think that was probably the worst decision they ever made. But hindsight is a wonderful thing." "Knowing what you know now?" Jack asked carefully. He had made sure that no mention of Lisa had gotten into any of the official files, just as he had omitted all references to Mary when Tosh had stumbled. "I'll come to that in a minute. Anyway, the committee decided to reactivate Torchwood about 10 months ago, albeit on a much smaller scale. They moved back to their original headquarters in Greenwich, and the entire staff numbers around 30, with the military side of things having been devolved to UNIT. The 15 survivors all rejoined, and are currently doing their best to get the whole thing up and running. When it was realized that you had vanished, Captain, a degree of panic set in, since I think they had been depending on you to help them find their feet." She paused to drink some of her coffee, and Jack reflected that he really did need to have his head examined for not having anticipated something like this. "Why did they shut down Cardiff?" Jack asked. "Two reasons. The first was that they weren't certain they could cope with 2 Torchwoods, neither of them without a really experienced leader. The rift was showing signs of having powered down, and since they had some kind of dampener, they figured they could temporarily shut down the smaller base, get themselves sorted, and then reopen it again at a later date. You'll recall, Captain, that 3 managed with only 3 staff for quite some time." Jack nodded, conceding the point. "And the second reason?" McCrimmon hesitated. "Torchwood is under siege from an unknown enemy. and they needed to consolidate all of their resources. Two bases were too big a risk. You have to remember, Captain, that half of them are new to this, and the other half are still very conscious of the fact that their mistake very nearly reduced the Earth to a charnel house, being fought over by the Daleks and the Cybermen.
Okay, that explains why Cardiff was shut down, but not why Torchwood is after Riento. To his surprise, it wasn't McCrimmon who answered him, but Tosh.
Torchwood wants Riento so they can make an example of him. They want him so they can execute him as a traitor.
What? Jack stared at her in utter disbelief. Why the hell?
Owen, Tosh said,
her voice shaking with either fury or hate, Jack wasn't sure which.
Owen betrayed him to save his own skin.
Her voice gave way and she sucked in a deep breath, staring down at her coffee. McCrimmon took over.
When London realized you had gone, they sent representatives down to Cardiff. Dr. Harper was under the impression that he would be taking over command, but he has an abrasive manner, and he managed to annoy the people London had sent. They discovered that Dr. Harper had been one of the prime movers in the Abaddon incident, and were more inclined to discipline and dismiss him than put him in charge. When he realized how much trouble he was in, Dr. Harper decided to cut a deal.
He told them about Lisa, Tosh said, her voice tight with the effort of control. He told them how Riento had hidden her for a year and how she nearly got free.
London went mad. They called him a traitor. They said such a crime couldn't go unpunished. They found out I destroyed all the information as to where he had gone and that I had retconned myself to forget. Owen didn't know anything. Riento had told him he was going to keep a hotel in Blackpool.
That pulled a bark of laughter from Jack, and Tosh smiled as well.
I know, but it made a kind of cockeyed sense, at least to someone like Owen. He got his deal, and they decided to close us down and move everything to London. They put in some kind of suppressor to keep the rift closed, and things seemed to be okay down there. They still want Riento, though.
Jack shot a look at McCrimmon, and his eyes narrowed when he saw a telltale flicker in her eyes. That's what Tosh thinks. That's probably what you were told to tell her. Now, tell us the truth. For a moment she was genuinely off balance, and Jack realized she was a lot younger than she seemed to be. She hesitated, searching his face for some kind of clue, but he adopted his most impassive expression and gave the impression that he was prepared to wait forever. After a while she sighed and relaxed.
In a way it's going to be a relief to stop lying, she admitted. I'm not as good as I'd like.
"What do you mean?" Tosh asked in bewilderment. McCrimmon took a deep breath.
"You mustn't tell a soul what I'm about to tell you. I don't have all the details. But I do know that there is another organization in existence which is utterly opposed to Torchwood and everything it represents. Even at its most arrogant, Torchwood still believed that its duty was to protect humanity per se, and Britain in particular. This organization seems to want to control humanity, and sees alien technology as a useful tool to accomplish that end.
Jack stiffened. Are you talking about Manus Dei? He demanded.
When McCrimmon gave him a startled nod, he swore vehemently. I thought we wiped them out after the war.
I think Torchwood dealt them a serious blow, and it took them a while to recover. But they're back, and during the time that Torchwood London was shut down, they took advantage, and raided the secure archives and got away with key items.
Jack threw his hands in the air in a gesture of disbelief. It just gets better, he muttered to himself, then frowned.
Is that why we had those truckloads of stuff arrive from London without warning and got told to store them in our own archives?
McCrimmon nodded. There was a degree of panic, especially when it was realized that the database listing all of the items in the archives had been damaged, so there was no way of actually knowing exactly what had been taken.
Who are these people? Tosh demanded.
Jack sighed. Bunch of power-hungry zealots who believe that humans are a superior form of life, and they, as the creme de la creme, are the natural leaders of humanity. Think of the worst kind of religious fanatic, terrorist and Nazi, all rolled into one regrettably intelligent package. Manus Dei is actually older than Torchwood. They're partly the reason why Torchwood was born.
I thought Torchwood was born after a werewolf tried to kill Queen Victoria and the Doctor intervened.
Tosh said in confusion. Who do you think was behind the werewolf? Jack asked dryly. And it wasn't trying to kill her. It wanted to bite her and infect her with the alien parasite. So they're a religious order.
Started out that way, Jack agreed, although there was probably always an element of power-seeking rather than any profound religious belief behind it. These days it's a lot more secular, and a hell of a lot more dangerous. What the hell is this to do with the Anto, though?
We have no idea, but we know that they do want him. Torchwood managed to get an agent inside the organization, and he managed to tell us that they were definitely after Ianto, and also trying to infiltrate the new Torchwood. That was the last that we heard of him, so we're assuming that he's been blown. That's when Torchwood decided to go look for Ianto themselves, but rather than say that, they took advantage of Dr. Harper's betrayal and used that as an excuse instead. She paused to give Jack a searching look.
Do you care about Ianto?
There were rumours, but then you left.
Jack sighed. I left because I had to. I could wish I'd done a better job of leaving, but I can't say I regret actually going. But yes, to answer your question, I do care about him. I care about him a lot, and I want him safe. I also want to kill Owen. He might not have put Ianto's life at risk, but he didn't know or care about that when he tried to make his deal.
McCrimmon gave a tired chuckle. You'll have to stand in line. He's not exactly a joy to know.
Tosh, you left me a letter. Do you remember doing that? Tosh looked startled and shook her head. You told me that you had keyed yourself to remember Ianto if I said a specific phrase.
McCrimmon looked intrigued.
Your voice particularly?
Jack nodded and she laughed.
Clever, she said approvingly. No wonder I wasn't getting anywhere.
My voice was wrong.
She hesitated and for the first time looked hesitant.
Do you want me to leave?
Jack gave her a long, thoughtful look. His first instinct was to say yes, since he didn't know her, and had no reason to trust her. On the other hand, he wanted to keep Torchwood out of his hair for a while longer, and the easiest way to do that would be by having one of their representatives where he could keep an eye on her.
You can stay, provided it's clear that I'm in command, he eventually said.
After a moment, she nodded.
Fair enough. Besides, you've pulled off enough miracles in your career for me to believe that you'll get us through this.
She extended her hand to him.
I'm in.
The name's Jamie, by the way.
My dad's the doctor.
McCrimmon in the family. Jack shook her hand and then turned his attention back to Tosh.
Let's see, what sort of phrase would you have picked?
They went through every phrase Jack could think of.
Looks good in a suit provoked the same lack of reaction as everything else, up to and including cleans up our shit.
They went through enough coffee to leave them all wired, and eventually had to leave and make for somewhere else. They ended up in one of the reading rooms of the British Library, and Jack was beginning to despair.
I'm sorry, Jack, Tosh said apologetically. I obviously thought it was an obvious one to choose.
Not your fault, Jack said warily. But at this rate, I'm never going to hear those wonderful Welsh vowels again. He saw it happen. Her eyes widened, her pupils contracted, and she shuddered like someone had walked over her grave. Jamie was on her feet in an instant and went over to support her as Tosh swayed in her chair. She sat where she was for a moment, her eyes closed and lips moving silently, as the memories cascaded out of the box she had placed them in and slotted back in place. When she opened her eyes again, there was a sparkle of mischief in them that he hadn't seen for a long time.
Well?
She gave a gurgle of laughter.
Hide in plain sight. He went to Aberystwyth to work as a researcher in the library, and he kept his real name. He figured they'd expect him to leave the country and change his name. He laid about a dozen false trails to different places all over the world. All he really did was change his national insurance number, date of birth, and bank details, and gave himself an extra middle name. Try finding one Ianto Jones in amongst all the others.
After a moment of stunned silence, Jack laughed as well. That was so Ianto. Simple elegance instead of unnecessary complexity. Simple misdirection instead of outright lies. Use the enemy's paranoia and mania for secrecy against them. The instinct when you're running is to get as far away as possible, so the clever thing to do is go a short distance away and make yourself so ordinary no one would think you were a fugitive.
Aberystwyth, he said and nodded.
That's where I'll go next.
Is that wise? Jamie asked with a frown.
Jack shrugged. I need to know he's safe. I need to know if the retcon is still working.
After that, Owen and I are going to have a little talk. Jamie and Tosh glanced at one another, revealed to see that the other was shivering as well. Jack's voice was cold as death, and his eyes were suddenly as remote and unreadable as any alien's.